Welcome to Dietitians Uncorked, a podcast hosted by Kat and Kelly, two registered dietitians who co-founded Nutriving, a virtual nutrition practice. We talk all things food, nutrition, life, and of course, wine. This is a judgment-free zone where all foods fit and all bodies are welcome. Thanks for listening. Welcome back to our listeners of Dietitians Uncorked. We are so excited to have you for another episode. Kat and I today are kicking off a mini series for a few podcast episodes we're going to do. We thought it would be helpful to talk through some of the chronic diseases that patients we've seen both in our private practice setting as well as prior experience in other settings. Kat and I have been around the block, worked in various hospitals, renal, dialysis centers, lots of different places. And so what we want to do is kind of share our experience working with patients who might have these different chronic diseases, all of which are impacted in part, at least, by nutrition. So that's our plan. We're starting off today with metabolic syndrome, which I know not a lot of people know what the deal is. So we'll go through all that and talk about our take. But first, wine. Kat, we have wine today.
Yes, it's been a freaking long time. So I think it was about time to drink some of our lovely wines. What do you got over there?
So I have one I've never tried before, but I was cooking once a month. I cook with my parents through the Julia Child cookbook. My parents don't live in the same state as me, so we have like a Zoom together and we pick a recipe from Julia Child's book and then we cook together and drink French wine. And it's really fun. And so the one I have is kind of left over from that cooking session. I'm totally going to butcher all the names here, but it's a 2017, it's a Bordeaux wine from France, Chateau. I'm sure this is not how French people would say it, but it's typed as like gray sack, essentially, which is not how you say it in French, I'm sure. It's from the Medoc region. That's how white girls say it. So it's delicious. You like Bordeaux, I'm assuming, right?
Yes.
Very good. Full body, long legs, as they say.
Delicious. What do you have? I went to a wine fest here in Chile. Mm-hmm. They do this sort of around the time of like a specific time of like harvesting or bottling or whatever processing. They do this fest where it's like there's a whole street where everything's blocked and all the wineries, like big and very small, kind of bring their wines out and you get to try some. They bring bottles so that they could give it, like sell it to you in a discount, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. So I am drinking one it's a Sauvignon Blanc. It's a small winery in Chile called La Llavería. And it's honestly, it was like $8 the bottle of wine, and it's nice. One of the best Sauvignon Blancs I think I've ever tasted.
Oh, that's wonderful. I am starting to shift, not with this Bordeaux obviously, but starting to shift more to the Sauv Blancs, the rosés, as it gets warmer here. So I wonder if they have that available in the States. You said it's a small winery.
Yeah, but you know what, it is so freaking good. I would be mm-hmm. surprised if it didn't make it further out. Like some of these places are like, oh yeah, our place is small, but they like partner up with big distribution places. And so like some of the wineries there were like, yeah, we have this one variety that is sold in New York City. It's like, okay, it's like a tiny little place, but so maybe.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Well, hopefully we can find a link. Assuming we can find a link to it, we'll include that in the show notes so all of our listeners can see if that's available. And we'll include this Bordeaux as well. It's been a second since we've had some wine recommendations. So we are ready to dive into metabolic syndrome.
Let's do it.
Kat, let's start help our audience understand, because I feel like a lot of people don't know what metabolic syndrome is. Some people probably have never even heard that before, or maybe you've heard it, but you have no idea what it is. Can you like just break down kind of a high level understanding of what it is?
Yes. It's interesting because even if you're working like within medical setting or clinical setting, this is not necessarily something you might run into a whole lot. Something that might happen to you is you might have a patient being referred to you as a dietitian, and you put together later based on a specific criteria that this person might have what we call metabolic syndrome. So it's sort of like a name that encompasses other risk factors that doesn't get thrown out as often. And so sometimes you hear like, make it equivalent to like realizing that there's more than one type of diabetes. Like you hear diabetes being like whatever, and then you didn't know. This is kind of like a little bit like that. Maybe that's not a great comparison, but so it's a cluster of risk factors. And so sometimes these conditions can come in isolation, but over time, if they you accumulate these risk factors, you would fall under the umbrella term of metabolic syndrome. And those risk factors are the following. I feel like I, in my mind, the soundtrack of Who Wants to Be a Billionaire or a Millionaire, I just like played. Okay. They're high triglycerides, low HDL cholesterol, which is like the good cholesterol, hypertension, or as we, you know, high blood pressure, having a high fasting blood glucose level, and then a high waist circumference. So these are sort of a cluster of risk factors that may sort of put a person at risk for other conditions like heart disease, stroke, type 2 diabetes. It is one of the things that as a cluster of risk factors come together in one person, we might need to just be more careful in their care and their lifestyle and dietary interventions, because they do put these people into higher risk of bigger health events that we want to prevent. Does that answer? Is that...
I think that's a good overview. Like thinking of it as a cluster of risk factors, I think that's like the basis of the definition in my mind. And then one other thing to note is that, so Kat listed the five risk factors. And so someone would be considered to have metabolic syndrome when they have three or more of the above risk factors. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you have all five, but if you have three or more, that's when that puts you in that category. And so as Kat mentioned, sometimes it's just piecing together the information. I've definitely worked with patients where, for example, they might know like their most recent blood pressure. Maybe they know their waist circumference, but like they haven't had a lipid panel in a while, right? So they don't have that recent triglyceride number or HDL cholesterol number, in which case, of course, it's impossible, right, to make the diagnosis of metabolic syndrome. So to me, the fact that this is not talked about more is really discouraging, because it just helps guide treatment, right? And so if I'm seeing a patient and I don't have all this information, that's a signal to me that like that person needs they need support, right? And there can be a million reasons someone has not been to a primary care physician or, you know, a nurse practitioner or anything like that recently, but really getting those annual visits, if you have access and the means to do so, and getting, you know, your blood pressure checked once a year, getting your blood taken, you know, which might include a lipid panel where you get those cholesterol numbers, getting your blood sugar taken. Like these are things that unfortunately not everyone has access to or means to get. And so of course, if you can't get that info, you're not going to be able to tell, but I think the fact that metabolic syndrome is so prevalent, the most recent data I have looked at, which there might be updated since then, but NHANES is like a very common national database, and the prevalence according to data last decade, so like in the 2010-ish range, was like 1 in 3 adults meet that criteria. So that's a lot of people, especially for something that's not super well talked about, which we got to change that, right? That's one podcast episode at a time.
But, you know, as you're thinking through, like, your family members or people you might know, like, in aging, right? Like, having a higher blood pressure, for that sure. might be a thing that they're dealing with. And then their lipid panel is sort of out of whack. And, you know, we talk about waist circumference. I mean, unless it's, like, incredibly protruding, maybe that's unclear as to like what that might be, or you're not going around measuring people's waist circumferences. So this is sort of a harder thing to identify if you're not aware, and if you're not working within, you know, healthcare or something like that. So and it's at the first glance of prevention care, right? Like where we can provide some guidance. It's not to the point where a stroke has occurred and we're having to deal with that. But this is sort of like the initial systemic signs that maybe we should pay closer attention to. So it's interesting that we there's such a high prevalence of this, but it's a term that we don't throw around as often in common knowledge, like the word cholesterol or diabetes, you know.
Right. And Kat and I started Nutriving, our business, essentially because we, as I said at the start of the episode, we've been around the block. We've worked with a lot of different patient types, various settings, and we've worked with a lot of people who are really sick, right? And they maybe didn't get the medical attention that they should have earlier in their disease state. So someone might not have known that they had diabetes until it got really, really bad. Or, you know, they had high blood pressure for so long and they didn't know. And then they had a heart attack or a stroke. Like these metabolic syndrome being what it is, being a cluster of risk factors, it's really an alarming sign from our body, like from various systems in our body that like, hey, things are not maybe working as well as they used to. We're not processing energy from food as well as we used to. So it's time to pay attention to that because there are things that we can do from a preventative lens, nutrition being a huge component, exercise, stress reduction. Like those are the types of measures that can be really, really effective in helping people reverse metabolic syndrome or go into quote unquote metabolic syndrome remission.
Yeah. Kelly, you've worked in this area, like with this big term, kind of the major focus of intervention. And I'm just, even I know you've shared with me a little bit, but I'm also curious as to like, what has been your experience working with this patient population that doesn't probably know that they have something called metabolic syndrome or, you know, or maybe vaguely aware. Like what is your role as a dietitian, you know, touching base with that kind of patient population?
Yeah, for sure. I feel like I could talk for a really long time about this because I have spent a good amount of time in a certain setting with patients with metabolic syndrome. I'll try to distill it down to things that really stick out to me. One, what sticks out to me is often after patients learn that they have this, right, that they meet criteria for metabolic syndrome, suddenly like health feels paramount. Like their personal health feels so important in a way that they just haven't thought, you know, they haven't felt that before. And I think often what I've seen is that comes with like a lot of anxiety, often, you know, guilt or shame for not controlling stress, for example, or not exercising as much as you should or not eating the way you should. And so sometimes people can get stuck in like that shame spiral. And so having, you know, a psychologist or a mental health professional in the realm is super helpful. Having a dietitian there, like my role, of course, has directly to do with nutrition, helping people, you know, try new foods, explore new recipes, understand how our body processes energy from food and how, you know, different foods impact your blood sugar, for example, or your triglyceride level. Like, I just went in a million directions, I'm realizing. And I was like, I'm going to try to distill it down to one or two things. But yeah, I think there's just this recognition after a patient learns that they have metabolic syndrome, that they're just like, oh shit, like I need to really take this seriously. And as scary as it can be in the moment, I would much rather help people work through that experience than see them in the ICU after they've had a heart attack and they're on a ventilator and we realize that they probably have had high blood sugar because they have diabetes, right, for a long time. They've had high blood pressure for a long time. Like, I would take dealing with a metabolic syndrome diagnosis over that a million times over, because it truly is a window in time to me. It's a window in time where you have the capacity to, you have the opportunity, right? I shouldn't say capacity. You have the opportunity to change the direction of your health. And that is both terrifying and also really exciting at the same time.
Yeah. That's such a good point to you when we're talking about preventive care. And I think as a topic, it's just not as sexy, right? It's like, of course, not.
Yeah.
It just, like, even in the example you just gave, like seeing somebody in the ICU, it's like, I don't know. I think what I think of is like, you know, your intervention as part of the interdisciplinary team is like vital for that person, right? So you're saving that person's life. You're doing the best that you can to provide the care. And then anything outside of that just doesn't sound, you know, like as sexy to be like, yeah, I'm here to prevent a heart attack. It just, it's not marketable. It's not something that I think comes across as like a powerful or strong enough message. But being a healthcare provider on both ends, and like the prevention side and then the more acute, you know, emergency intervention side, I have to say that I find nutrition to be so freaking empowering on this other end. And I sometimes wish I could just like plug, I could just have like a little emotional hose or plug connecting my, you know, sense of like, you can do this, to the other person, be able to really communicate the wonderful opportunity that might be. Because, you know, when you envision your future as a human being, you don't, or I hope you wouldn't, you don't envision yourself, you know, in a wheelchair or having some form of disability or feeling really shackled by your health to like travel or move or participate in the lives of the people you love. You envision yourself with the same health, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And we can't really guarantee that no one's going to be struggling with something health related, but there are other diseases or illnesses or things that sort of build over time. And if we could address them way earlier, I know I'm preaching to the choir, but just as like as a listener perspective, like prevention care is not sexy, but boy, is it so important to talk about it, especially as like these little tiny things creep up. You could put them as a cluster of risk factors, and all of a sudden we're having a serious discussion, but it's a wonderful opportunity to look into your nutrition, into your health, into your own self-care.
Yeah, I kind of think of it as like a snowball, right? It's as you start making a snowball, it's small, right? You're packing snow in your hand. And then if you're working to like build a snowman, you're going to like continue to add on that snowball. That's kind of how I feel with preventative care. It's like it just starts small and then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And there are so many chronic disease states that are impacted by nutrition, that the signs are not there until the snowball is really big, right? If you have a heart attack, you realize like, oh, something's wrong, right? And with all these things, of course, we can't control all the factors, right? There's no one factor responsible for someone having a heart attack in most cases, or someone getting diabetes. And we can't control all the factors, right? There's a genetic component, aging for sure. Like as we age, we're more likely to see that blood sugar go up, the blood pressure go up. So all the more important in my mind to really spend the time and the energy on that prevention component and try not to let things like grow to that bigger. And I don't know if the snowball analogy works for you, but if you're listening and you like follow what I'm saying, use it. If not, you know, there are many analogies to think about it, but just like Kat, I feel like you and I have talked about this, going to the dentist, right? People know in general that you should go to the dentist twice a year, right? As most of the recommendations go every 6 months. And sometimes life gets in the way and people maybe don't go to the dentist. But it's like dentistry is one of those things where regular care prevents problems. If you don't go to the dentist mm-hmm. for like 5, 6, 7, 8 years, you might need a root canal, right? Your likelihood of needing a root canal or needing like really serious, painful, expensive work is higher if you don't follow that regular schedule of going. And I think the same thing applies to a lot of the disease states we're going to be talking about in the next few episodes, in that like small doses of prevention, little steps that you can do consistently, that's what's going to give you the best bet, because you can't fight age and you can't fight your genetic profile. But there are things we can do around nutrition, physical activity, stress reduction that can really help protect you as much as we can.
Right. Right. I also want to speak to that, like one, you know, that specific patient who finds out that this is going on, that they're at higher risk for these, you know, health events that no one really wishes for, and takes it really seriously. You know, I've recently had a client tell me, like, I'm just afraid of eating, because I feel like it's going to put me back in the hospital. And I think, you know, when we think about people, when we have an image of somebody who has diabetes or has health issues or complications, I don't know why, but I feel that there's sort of an understanding that that person was wholly irresponsible and they almost like they deserved, which is such a ridiculous notion. But there is a little bit of that attitude sometimes with some of these specific risk factors. And I'm going to speak to like those clients, those patients, those people. If you have found yourself in that situation and you're, you know, you talked about a little bit the shame spiral. When we talk about things that you can do, I mean, your diet can revolutionize how you feel and hopefully, you know, you're really make a big impact on your health and your outcomes in the future. But what I think is missing from this conversation is that when it comes to nutrition, this is about patterns, right? This is about things that we build consistently over time, because no one meal is going to give you diabetes. No one meal is going to cause your cholesterol to go crazy. It's not about the one ingredient that you didn't, you know, that it sort of escaped through and you bought an item at the grocery store and you consume it and now we're back in the hospital. That generally is not how this works, unless there's like an infection or bacterium or something like that. But it's when we're talking about chronic illness and prevention, we're really talking about patterns. And so kind of to speak to a little bit what you're saying, it's making that choice of like putting your self-care, decreasing stress, increasing fiber, watching out for the kinds of carbohydrates you're consuming, these kinds of regular decisions can really impact the likelihood of this developing into something more serious or you stopping in its tracks and hopefully getting these things under control. But to speak to that kind of patient population, which there are a lot of people out there that do take their health very seriously, that this isn't about, you know, being irresponsible and having been told 100 times to do something and, you know, being faced with some sort of consequence that it's illness. I'm speaking to the ones that are concerned and who are vigilant and who do their best. Like, you're doing wonderful. If this is you, like, small steps over time is what we're looking for.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's when we're working with patients, a lot of it is, you know, of course, identifying like what are things that that person can do to support their health, you know, work on blood sugar control or help reduce blood pressure, whatever it is. But also celebrating, you know, the wins that they are having. Because so mm-hmm. often mm-hmm. I know I've seen this, Kat, I'm sure you have too, but clients can just be so hard on themselves, right? It's like, I had a birthday party and I did have a cupcake. And it's like, back to Kat, your point of patterns, like, it's okay. It's totally human. Like, you should, you can have a cupcake if you want to, right? In that moment, if it feels good for you to have that. But it's really about the overall pattern in that snowball effect, right? Like, what are you doing more often than not that's either helping or hurting your chances of developing a certain chronic disease? And nutrition is one part of the picture. Like it's such a complex picture with so many of the diseases we'll be talking about, metabolic syndrome included. It's very much like multifactorial, but that does not mean that we shouldn't address it, right? We should take control of what we can.
Yes. If you could, let's say I'm listening to this and I'm like, oh shit, I have high blood pressure and a fasting glucose that was elevated and my LDL is low. So like, I am kind of in this cluster of risk factors. If we could do like headlines, like these are like top 5 nutrition thing or like just general lifestyle things, what would you say are the things that you might tell somebody like, hey, be mindful of A, B, C? Any come to mind?
Like 20. Yeah. I would say it's very hard to choose, but I'm going to pick 2 for now. One, I talk like patients who I've worked with metabolic syndrome, so often their fiber intake, super low, like not where we want it to be. And so we get fiber from, you know, fruits and vegetables and legumes and whole grains, and fiber impacts so many components of our health, you know, not only digestive, our cholesterol levels, like it's really key in our gut health and in so many areas. And so often I'm educating patients about the fact that, you know, let's take a look at your diet. And typically the fiber, like I said, will be super low. So it's about helping them understand that that's true, right? You're not getting enough fiber. Let's talk about what it is, where it's found, and how can we work more into your diet? And that's where I feel like that's the fun part, because it's like trying new foods and trying new recipes. And that component of the education and the behavior change process is really rewarding. Like to see someone be like, oh, I don't like collard greens, for example. And then we like try a few different recipes and they realize, oh, I do like that. I just maybe I haven't had it in 20 years and I had one experience with it that's just sticking out of my memory. But like, you know, we grow and we evolve. And there are so many times I've had patients think that they don't like a food and then they try it in a different recipe and they do like it. And so, fiber is a huge one that always comes up pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. I would say the second one is movement, like helping the client or patient start to get a movement routine in, which might start very simple, like adding a 5 to 10 minute walk after they get home from work or on their lunch break, but really building, like I work on consistency before anything else. So let's do something consistently as much as we can and then build on that. And I find that really helps create that confidence in the patient that like, I can do this, like I can make changes, and that empowers patients and feel like they have agency in their health. Mm-hmm. What would you say?
I loved your answers. also because it's just such a human thing, you know, like, hey, you know, try collard greens. You might like them. You don't like them. Hey, there's like 1,000 other vegetables we could pick from. Like it's a great idea. I would say probably, I think of sodium a lot in especially when we're talking about blood pressure. Unfortunately, a lot of the easy to eat and reheat kinds of foods are incredibly high in sodium. Generally speaking, we want a sodium item per serving to be around 140 milligrams or less. You can find a, you know, frozen meal item in the frozen aisle that from the outside of the marketing, it's like, it has vegetables, it has no gluten, you know, it like seems like it's healthy, and you turn it around and the sodium could easily be at like 800 milligrams. So I happen to talk about this a lot with my clients on a regular basis. And so being mindful of sodium, really just knowing how to identify a better product, maybe even a brand that tends to not be super high in sodium. That is a conversation I feel like it's super empowering, because we start recognizing the foods that might be a little high, lowering that intake, and then seeing that blood pressure come down quite a bit just because we're not loading our bodies of something we did not know we were doing.
Right.
It's awesome. I think that's one. I think the tools are readily available too. So, I think that one comes to mind. The other one is being mindful of overdoing it. Sometimes there are times in life where either because of something really stressful and hard is happening in your life, or if we're very happy and celebratory, both sometimes can lead to maybe overdoing it with alcohol and sugar. Hopefully, I love it when it's something celebratory. I mean, we could continue celebrating your health in a different direction. But regardless of the emotional state or the reasons for this, like being aware of how much alcohol we're consuming, having a better health relationship with alcohol can be empowering as well. Understanding the power of sugar and if they're impacting our fasting glucose, we can do something about it. Mm-hmm. I think those are kind of very practical, and also sort of it inspires, or I hope it does, a level of like introspection.
Yeah, definitely. And I think hearing you talk about sodium and kind of the revelations that come as you're working with patients about that, I think you can say the same thing about identifying added sugar in patients' diets.
Yeah.
Like there are so many times people are consuming things that they don't realize are so loaded with, you know, sodium, for example, or added sugar. And then once you help a patient start to, you know, read the nutrition label and like know what to look for beyond just the marketing claims on the front, that's when they're like, oh my God, I did not know. Like right? We're all so busy. You're paying attention to a million things, making a million decisions per day. And so it's like, don't blame yourself. Don't fault yourself if you didn't realize that. Simply just be like, okay, this is the moment I know, right? So I'm learning and now I can make a different choice. And I think those are the types of moments that help people feel empowered and like they can do something, which is really cool to see. Like that's definitely one of my favorite parts of our profession.
For sure. So this has been fun. I think that there are so many different things that we experience with clients, like actually living through this, that I think have helped me as a provider, as a health provider, as a dietitian, as somebody who like understands the guidelines, but maybe like applying them is a little bit different, like in real practice. And so I'm excited because I think this series will give us a chance to dive into those things a little bit more. And so we are so grateful if you tuned in. We are doing this series for a couple of weeks. So if you're interested, if anybody in your family, or yourself suffers from an illness that you want us to touch on, we'd be happy to do that. We are on Instagram. We have a website, nutriving.com. You can shoot us a little message through Instagram as well if you'd like to, if that's easier. But otherwise, we will chat with all of you in a couple weeks. Take care. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in. Bye.